When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome, everyone, to Rock'em Nation Podcasts. This is a brand new part two episode of Dive Cuts. We are on season six, episode 7.2. We got through half of the SEC in the last pod, and we were already like right at about the hour mark. And so your host, me, my name is Sam Snelling, my co-host, Matt J. Harris, and our guest, Blake Lovell, decided to just call it and come back and do a whole another podcast about the top half of the SEC.
He wanted to talk about the CFP rankings so badly.
That is what I wanted.
Yeah, it was a combination of timing and us, as always, kind of going along on trying to get through the entire league. So we're all back. If you listened to the last podcast, you probably know Blake. If you've listened to this podcast feed over the last few years, you probably already know Blake. Blake, welcome back. We're glad you were able to join us again in the twice in the same week. We are privileged and honored.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. We are sitting here recording this as Missouri is playing their exhibition game against Washington University. And
Washington University is in St. Louis.
There you go. I'm sorry to leave that part out there to all the St. Louis natives.
I'm a former employee of Washington University in St. Louis, and shortly before I got there, they like rebranded to make sure that people didn't confuse them with UW or anything like that. So,
Those schools are still better rated than Missouri in US News ranking.
Yeah,
so
everything on their like letterhead and like it all says Washington University in St. Louis. It's kind of a thing. So,
well, that's fine. Listen, Missouri's up 15 as we're talking now.
But I believe that's like an old. Is that Missouri Valley? Were they in the Valley together? Like way back.
Probably.
Yeah, it's something like that, like founding members of like the Missouri Valley in like the 1920s.
Wow. A lot at stake here then.
Old rivalries renewed. I should probably look that up because it's actually pretty fascinating to like go back. I think Basketball Reference is always kind of my go-to on that. And you can actually go back and see those old leagues. It's actually pretty funny.
This SEC pod's off to a rip-roaring start right now.
Anyways, let's get back to the 1930s because there was a lot to talk about.
Right? Yeah, so to sort of, I guess, pick up where we left off, we were kind of talking about Missouri, and there are mostly modest expectations around you know, their season this year. I think a lot of people that are higher on them are higher on them strictly for the, you know, the fact that they have an offensive weapon like Isaiah Mosley on the team. You know, as they sort of struggle to shoot the ball and aren't quite putting away WashU tonight, I think there's probably some Mizzou fans with some trepidation. But I think that this is also important to say that the soft entry into the non-conference schedule was built for a reason, and it's so Dennis Gates can kind of figure out what he has, who is going to do what, and what rotations are going to work. So it's all sort of like being thrown at the wall right now, and we'll find out what sticks.
Yeah, the rotations tonight have been kind of wonky, but that's what exhibitions are for. I think there's a kind of a natural pecking order in the backcourt, but the front court is going to be problematic for this group. So I think that's, you know, just as we sort of sit here tonight, it's sort of nice to, even if we can't see it, you know, because the game's not being broadcast, but as you watch the rotations go through and as you see kind of observations come in, the backcourt looks like it's going to be pretty solid. They're going to have to figure some things out chemistry wise and get, you know, their lineups together. But it looks like once you get past the front line of this team defensively, there's going to be some size issues. And I think that kind of gets in to the bigger sort of discussion about the ceiling on this team. I think the guards were good enough to put them in the mix for an NCAA tournament bid, but the front court, I think, is where, you know, the ceiling kind of gets lowered on them a little bit. But I'm sort of curious for where Blake's thoughts are on just kind of this roster at this point.
Well, you know what's going to happen here, because we decided, and this, we got pushed to a part two, they're going to lose this game and all chaos is going to just ensue. And everyone's going to be calling me every name in the book for hyping up this Dennis Gates hire. But no, in all seriousness, if they do lose, I'm going to cover another sport. But no, I mean, I think, like you said, I think that's kind of what we thought initially, in terms of, you looked at the guard play and you're just thinking, okay, they're going to be able to figure some things out in the backcourt. You don't have a lot of, you know, worries about that. But it is, I mean, you kind of know what you're going to get from Kobe Brown, but it's, I think defensively specifically, like you said, Matt, like that's where you start to look at it and say, okay, we got to remember who they're going up against on a 9-in-9-out basis, especially in the SEC. And there's a lot of good guards that can get to the rim. There's a lot of big guys, you know, around the league that can do a variety of things. And yeah, I think it's a fair question with this team, just to kind of see what it looks like beyond, you know, just the, what I think can be a very, very good guard group, you know, guys on the wing. But once you get in the actual paint, I'm just curious to see how everything sort of plays out. So,
well, after as much as we've sort of talked about Missouri, oh, and I did look it up, and it was the Missouri Valley Conference.
Thank God.
The last time they played each other was actually 1959. So it's been a minute. But yeah, kind of moving on into like the rest of the league, like I feel like most people have a pretty good gauge on Missouri. Like the ball handling should be pretty good. The front court is a worry. They have a big time scorer in Isaiah Mosley. So ceiling on them, probably what, like a 7th in conference? Is there a way for them to get up to 6th? Or we think, like, I'm kind of thinking like, you know, 7 to 11 is the range that I sort of think they fall into.
I cap them at 8. I just think the front court, they're going to see, especially, you know, as you start to get towards the top of, you know, if you look at Colin Castleton or you look at an Oscar Shibwe, or, you know, you begin to get to Auburn, which is going to have some young guys there and Jonai Broom, but there's still some size there. Alabama's going to have some athleticism up front. I just think, you know, once you start to, and even if you like look at KJ Williams, who's kind of an undersized in terms of height, you know, from a height perspective, but, you know, can absolutely play physically in the block. I just think you start to really get into the area where the front courts in this league in the upper half have a little bit more depth. And I think that's going to really kind of put a capper on them. I think that they would need, you know, another team in front of them to really have some chemistry issues or maybe some injury issues to open it up. I think the front court depth really kind of, I think, puts a capper on them at number eight. But, you know, weird things have happened in this league, and there's always things we can't foresee. But I think eighth is probably where I'd slot them at the top end.
Yeah, I mean, I think that to me, and I think there's a clear top five in the league. I think there's three teams behind them, Florida A&M, LSU for me, and then I think you've even got a team like Ole Miss that probably has more upside than I've given them credit for. So I think I'm kind of there. Probably eight's as high as I would go just based on that. Just because, yeah, again, it's always about the other teams too. It's not just about your team. And I think I would be surprised if, especially those top five teams, you know, went south, although I guess we said that about Alabama last year, and it did. But I just think with the talent of those top five teams, and then I think you've certainly got potential with Florida and LSU and even A&M, if everything comes together offensively. Yeah, I feel like it would be hard to get above that eight range. And I mean, at the absolute best, I think seven would be your mark there.
So we're saying essentially that the best case here is probably back into the bubble conversation. Maybe if it's an especially deep year, yeah, you can maybe get to in like a playing game situation, but NIT is probably the more realistic, you know, sort of, I think, outcome for this group, which is not bad given that they were 137th in KenPom last year. But it just feels like, you know, in this league where 10 wins is kind of your cutoff, and, you know, I think seven's usually the upper end of the bids that they get. You know, I think if you're in eighth or ninth, you're going to be on the outside looking in. But that's nothing to sneeze at if you're a Missouri fan and after what happened last year.
Well, yeah, so the next team kind of on our list, Matt, and you'll appreciate this, is a team who some view as just vastly and otherworldly better than the Missouri Tigers, and that's the Florida Gators. They do bring back Colin Castleton, which is no small feat. Castleton is very likely to be sort of a minimum sort of 15.9 rebound kind of guy. He's very, very good and skilled big man. He knows what he does well and doesn't really venture much outside of that. Doesn't extend or try to shoot a whole lot of threes. He's good with his back to the basket, and he's good at rebounding. He's good at finishing. So that's pretty much what he does. The rest of the Florida roster is interesting. They have quite a few transfers, like Missouri. Todd Golden is in his first year as a head coach. He's a guy that I think a lot of national writers seem to like a lot. You know, but
Access journalism is amazing.
It's funny what happens when you get to tag along. But yeah, like I think Florida should be better than Missouri. I think Mike White had sort of, you know, reached the end of his line there. I thought it was smart of him to kind of get out. I've never really thought he was a bad coach, but I just thought he was just struggling to sort of get his imprint on the program. And, you know, Florida was still kind of attracting talent because it's Florida. But he never really seemed to kind of get comfortable and get things rolling in a way I think a lot of people thought when he first took over. So moving on to Todd Golden, Blake, what are your kind of initial thoughts on the Gators and Todd Golden in general? Like is this a guy you think is a good hire, a great hire, or like all hires, are we just like giving a big shrug emoji?
That's what I'm doing, like, on this one. I just, you know, because I think Todd Golden is someone that, you know, the national media certainly loves. And, you know, I'm not saying I don't. I just, like, I think sometimes it's okay. Like, I get it. I look at him and see the potential that's there. You know, but I mean, I do also look at someone that is young and only been a head coach for 3 years and now steps into a program that wants to be, you know, the Billy Donovan days. And I think that's a large, you know, thing that you're stepping into there. But the good news for Todd Golden is that he's not Mike White, and he's, you know, he's not stepping into being the guy after Billy Donovan. He's stepping into being the guy after Mike White. And I think that's, you know, that immediately kind of puts him in a, I mean, I think there's still pressure there, but it's less pressure packed. But I think he is someone that you can clearly see, though, that has kind of a feel for where things are going in terms of the game itself and how the game's played and just kind of this era in general. I think the big questions will be, you know, the recruiting aspect. It'll be things like that. I think over the next however many years, whatever you want to put as the range there, I think will be certainly the biggest thing. I think this team in particular, guys, I mean, look, I was someone that initially, like, I was a Colin Castleton. I don't know what, like, I wasn't anti-Colin Castleton. I wasn't sure, like, that he was going to be what he's actually become. And now, like, I'm just like, I love the guy. Like, I think he's just someone that will certainly put them in a position to win a lot of games. And, you know, I think the thing is, like, what we saw with Florida and why they started to slip a little bit, Mike White's best teams there, you know, that they had to play good defense and they slipped a little bit defensively. Their offense was just, I don't know what the right word is, boring. I mean, is that too strong? Like, they're just the times they just were not. I mean, really, because I think they just were not very exciting on offense in many ways at all. And I think we may have mentioned this on the last one we did, or we may have mentioned it off air. You know, just the difference in how Mike White wanted to play at Louisiana Tech versus how he played at Florida. And, you know, I know personnel factors into that too, but I don't know. Like, I'm curious to see what Todd Golden will do just in terms of what they look like with this particular team stylistically. And to me, it is Colin Castleton and, well, everybody else, because I don't know what Jones is going to do. I mean, you know, the potential's there, but he's got to shoot better. I really like Kwesi Reeves. I think he's someone that has a lot of potential, but you're still only talking about a guy that, you know, didn't average a lot of points and stuff last year, but I think this is kind of he can build off a strong finish. And then you mentioned, like, Kyle Lofton, Trey Bonham, you know, Alex Fudge is there, Will Richard. I mean, Blue Ribbon maybe, where Golden's thinking about the idea of playing Castleton and Jatobo together, and I'm just like, what in the world?
What?
How would that look? I don't know how you do that, but if he does, listen, he's the analytics guy.
Has he seen Jatobo play basketball?
Don't know. Look, that may have just been a passing comment, right? But I'm pretty sure he mentioned that. I wouldn't have put it in my notes here. I wouldn't have just made that up, I don't think. So, those kind of things are, I guess, intriguing for different reasons. But I don't know. I mean, I say all that to say that, you know, I don't know what to expect from Todd Golden at Florida, because I think that he's a good coach. I think he's still young, and I'm sure there will be an adjustment period, like a lot of new coaches that come into the SEC. But if he can recruit and, you know, he can get players there that are going to be players that need to be players at Florida, meaning this group he brought in, the transfers, like, can they translate and be just fine? Then I think Florida will be just fine.
I think the what's hard for me is, and Sam and I have talked about this, is the job that Todd Golden had to do at USF is entirely different than what, you know, Dennis Gates had to do at Cleveland State. But Todd Golden, you know, he helped recruit, you know, some guys on that roster that, you know, helped that program max out. But, you know, Dennis Gates showed up to Cleveland State and had to put together a team in a week, and then, you know, had to, you know, coach that team through a really terrible first season where they were getting crushed, then coach them through a pandemic, then bring everybody back. And, you know, I think it's just a different sort of job to do what he did at Cleveland State as opposed to what Todd did, which was get a team from 70th to, you know, 25th in KenPom versus getting a team to, you know, 160 from 320 in KenPom. I just think they're totally different. And, you know, that's not to speak ill of what Todd had to do. It's just, I think, you know, to paint him as a master, you know, artist is I think a little bit generous there. And I think part of it is because, you know, and I don't want to, you know, besmirch Todd for being open and for talking about how his team uses analytics and how his team, you know, goes about using data. But I think there's a lot that sort of plays into what, you know, writers, you know, want to hear from a guy. And I think there's some tropes there that get rolled out. And I think Todd gets a lot of credit for that. Whereas I think if you, like, listen to Dennis Gates talk, and I've talked to Dennis a couple of times, you know, that guy's very much about ball. It's like, not that he's not, you know, personable, but, you know, that guy is, you know, direct. He's honest. He's clear about what he wants. And I just think it's different, you know, personalities, different sort of jobs that they've had. You know, I'm curious what Todd does in year one here, because I think, you know, this is a synergy all-star team that he's put together in the transfer portal. You know, Will Richard is getting mad love from NBA Twitter, who feels like he's a jumbo combo guard. And, you know, you're seeing clips of, you know, what he can do and making secondary reads and ball screens. And it's really great, but he was the number three guy on Belmont. You know, Trey Bonham's a guy who put up good numbers at VMI, but if you buy into analytics, you know, even if you are skeptical of what they say defensively, he still gave up almost a point per possession defensively, you know, in the Southern Conference. So it's like, okay, can we put Bonham on the floor for extended periods defensively? Kyle Lofton is probably my favorite pickup there. He's not a really an efficient scorer, but that guy moves the ball. You know, he's, you know, got a good an assist rate. He's played on a really, really good team in the A-10. But, you know, I feel like people will sometimes probably underrate Lofton a little bit there. And Alex Fudge, you know, if you knew Will Wade, if you were a young guy who could come in and make an impact, he was not going to hesitate playing you. And Alex Fudge had a hard time breaking through for LSU last season. So I tend to look at this team as a nice, there are nice pieces individually here. My question is how they sort of fit together. And whereas when I look at what Missouri has, all the pieces that, you know, Dennis brought in were for a very specific reason. Tonight, they're running basically the same base offense they ran at Cleveland State, it sounds like. And it's clicking for stretches because he went and got guys that could do those things. So it's not a question of, you know, whether I think Todd's a good coach or not, whether I think he's, you know, a smart guy and data-driven. It's just what does his roster look like and how does it manifest? And, you know, Castleton's a good player, but he's not a creator type. He's got to rely on other people. So, look, I think if you were to give me the raw talent argument, there's a lot here. I'm just not quite sure how it interlocks. And that's going to be the fascinating thing, is to see what Todd does here. If they get it right, it's a top six team. But I think there's a bigger margin for error than some folks think. So that's me crapping all over Florida there. But it's just, I think it's a, I think there needs to be a little bit more skepticism, I think, thrown their way than perhaps they've gotten so far.
Yeah, my big sort of thing with it is, if you can start with somebody like Castleton in your roster, like, you're starting at a good
place. And I love Castleton. That guy, yeah, that guy is fantastic.
Like, I think that's a solid enough place to start. And if, you know, Kouassi can sort of take another step, then
he looked good down the stretch last year too.
Like, all the other guys just have to be kind of okay, and they can probably finish around sixth.
I think Miron Jones is the guy that we all have to kind of look at a little bit closer. He shot the ball really well at Penn State, did not shoot it well last year.
Yeah.
If that guy bounces back and he plays closer to the level at Penn State, Kouassi Reeves, you know, I feel like he and Manny Obaseki are having the same kind of, you know, situation where if they take that step, now their teams go from being, you know, borderline bubble teams to being ones where you think, okay, maybe they get in that mix for fourth or fifth and then the double bye. So I get it. The transfers are cool here, but man, if Jones can bounce back and Reeves takes a step forward, then I think this team is one that that I'm going to put more stock in. And, you know, they'll have a nice kind of core trio that's going to really ease the burden that some of the newcomers feels. But we'll see. But I definitely think there's a path for them to be better than them, we're saying, as well. So I'll try and flip it and be an optimist there.
Well, let's go from crapping on Florida to crapping on Auburn.
They're so fun. I love Auburn. I love. They are just pure. They're like pure dopamine. Watching those guys play is just a dopamine hit. And you can bring logic all you want. But I
always
felt
like watching, you know, Bruce Pearl. I'm trying to remember a couple of years ago, I think, when Muss didn't quite have it going yet in an early conference game. It was either 2 years ago or 3 years ago when they were just okay, Arkansas was. And watching Auburn and Arkansas was literally like watching a grassroots game. Like, it was it was half disaster, but all excitement, and just like horrible things were happening, but it was fun to watch. And part of that is, and I kind of wrote this in my preview of Auburn, like, I love how much confidence like Bruce instills into his team and his players. To a degree, like, at some point last year, like Wendell Green, Katie Johnson, and all these guys need to understand, like, you are not the star on this team. Like, the star is the guy who is being drafted as a top three pick in the NBA draft. The anchor behind him, the guy who was, I think, what did Kessler go, second round? But I mean, those guys were awesome last year. And really what held Auburn back was because, like, guys like Green and Johnson just had to take over too many possessions. And so, like, if you're funneling back and realistically, like, all that happened and they still went 15-3, they still won the league. But this is why basically I've dropped, you know, personally, I've dropped Auburn back. I think I had them fourth. I've seen them, you know, fourth, fifth. I don't really think many people other than maybe Auburn fans have them any higher. Blake, are you ready to crap on Auburn? Let's hear you crap on Auburn.
Come on, you know I'm a big Bruce Pearl believer. No, I mean, I went back and forth on Auburn and Alabama, to be honest, in the 4-5 spot, because like I said, I think it's a clear top three. But I did wind up putting Auburn ahead of Alabama, and I think it's a lot of that. Well, I don't want to say a lot of that, but a portion of that is because of what we saw from Alabama last year, which I know may be unfair judging into a new season. But I mean, they were so disappointing coming off of winning the league the year before that I think, you know, I think it's worth being a little hesitant on how this group comes together. But, you know, you could say somewhat similar stuff about just how this Auburn roster is assembled in that, like you guys said, I mean, look, I mean, shot selection, they got to be much better from a shot selection standpoint, I think, if they're going to be a team that can compete for a and that's being nice. Like, let's be honest. Like, I mean, they're just, it's got to be. Like, I mean, that's,
I love early shot clock airball threes. Like, that's just like what I'm, it's what gives me life watching.
Pulling
Auburn.
From the Auburn logo, no less.
It felt like you had guys that were trying to be Jarrett Harper and Bryce Brown, not realizing that Jarrett Harper and Bryce Brown had to be those guys on a completely different team where they needed those guys to do some of the things they did. Whereas last year, you really didn't need anything except for, you know, Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler doing their thing. So I think, you know, that could worry you, though, I suppose, on this team, because if you do look around, they may think the same thing, I suppose, about this. But I think I really like Jeff Jasper. I think he's someone that
I was really impressed with him last year.
You know, I mean, it's just like his numbers weren't sexy, I guess, but I mean, I looked it up. He only had, I'm trying to think, I screwed up the number in my initial notes here, and that's what one I have here. I think he had like 12 turnovers in SEC play last year, and like he played a ton of minutes. I think I have it. He only had 25 turnovers in 736 minutes that he played last year. And I think he started, 30 something games. I think he's their best defender on the perimeter.
Yeah. That was going to be my thing. Know, that guy gave up being a volume scorer and bought into being a Loctite defender.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's like, you want to talk, and we can get into this more with Alabama, so I'll save the Gerald Nadeau's critique. But like, you ask me what's going to be the separator between Auburn and Alabama, Bruce gets his guys to defend. Like, and Zepp Jasper is my chief point there. That guy had just grisly defensive numbers at Charleston, grisly numbers, because he's having to do so much offensively. And I thought, okay, Wendell Green's going to clearly be the point guard here. You know, his just everything about his tape at Eastern Kentucky, everything about the stat profile said that's your lead guard. What happens if Zepp is, you know, put behind, you know, Flanagan or Katie at the combo spot? And that dude just bought into being a stopper and did it night in and night out. And, you know, to me, stabilized them in times and games if you needed to stop a run, or you need to get into somebody, you put Zepp out there. And I thought that was probably like the biggest testament to me of how much, like, you talk about Bruce buying into his guys and giving them the freedom to flow. That's sort of the reciprocal from those guys. Like, okay, coach, I'm going to give you everything I have in this kind of role where I don't get a lot of attention. But Zepp Jasper to me is like the best, you know, sort of example of how Bruce's guys will buy into him, because that guy gave everything he had defensively. It was awesome to see.
Two stats I have on my notes here, and I don't know how, you know, I think they're relevant to probably what Auburn achieves this year, but, you know, I think a lot of people just remember, it's like, well, you just always expect the Bruce Pearl team to be able to shoot. Well, that hasn't really been the case the past several seasons. I think they finished 269th, 225th, and 301 in 3-point percentage the past 3 years. But one thing I did kind of note here, and I think this is kind of what you've seen with Bruce's teams, and I mean, they brought Broom in, who, what was it? I think he was easily top five, right, guys, in block shots last year, like 130-something. But they've been top 30 in block percentage, I think, past 6 years. I don't know how many years Bruce has been there now. So I think that's important because obviously they have Traore there too. This is a fascinating team to me because we kind of just talked about all the different parts, but the one part we haven't really talked about is Alan Flanagan. And like, to me, like that's it for this team. Like if he can be Alan Flanagan, and I'm not saying he's going to have the same role he had a couple years ago where, you know, he had to do so much. I think he's still got to probably do a lot on this team for them to get to that highest point. But I mean, I think it's pretty clear injury wise, he just was never 100% last year. He's a good defender. I don't know that he has to be the top scorer on this team, but boy, it would be nice, I'm sure, if you're asking Bruce Pearl. So I think he's the key to everything. I think they've got to get him back. He doesn't maybe I don't know that he gets back to exactly what he was a couple years ago, but if they can get him close, my confidence in this team will be a lot higher.
Yeah, and you know, I'm curious what the offensive mix looks like right now, just because the 4 and 5 spots are going to be really, really different from.
Yeah.
And even if you have like a Yoan Traore, who's a really, really athletic big, he's a freshman, you know, Broom is transitioning up. You know, Walker Kessler was a 5-star guy who had, you know, high major experience. Little questions about, I like the overall kind of physical profile and athletic profile of the front court, but it's different. You know, one, there's not a lottery pick and there's not a 5-star kid coming from North Carolina. Still talent, but a little bit different there. So I have faith that Bruce is going to get them to a point where I feel like they're going to contend for a top 4 spot. But I think you're not going to see the kind of death machine you saw at times offensively last year. So I feel good about them. And at this point, you know, Bruce is, I think, early on, I think kind of underrated Bruce. But over the last couple of years, his teams have generally outperformed where they've been picked in the preseason. So if they're 5 now, you know, I think at worst, they're going to finish where they're slotted. So I feel pretty good about where they are in the mix.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, I actually had them 4th. And so, yeah, we probably should have talked Alabama first if we're kind of going up the chain.
We need time. We need time.
Can you ever really talk about Alabama without talking about Auburn? Like, come on. Like, I feel like this is like just always. So
yeah, and I do think like that is a healthy transition because overall, like I think the talent level on Alabama is higher than Auburn. You know, if you look at Alabama's guards versus Auburn's guards, like Alabama's guards are like more talented. Like Auburn doesn't have a dude like Brandon Miller. like even Charles Bediako, like I think Charles Bediako is more talented than either of the Auburn bigs. At least the Auburn bigs are going to play. I mean, I certainly take him over, you know, Dylan Cardwell, but he's better than Broom and you know, better out the gate as you know than Traore or however you say his name. But like there is that hang up, and one of the things that like for me, everybody like kind of jumped on this Nate Oates bandwagon a couple years ago, but it's really something to just sort of like field average defenses, basically like your entire coaching
average defenses.
And then like turn out like your best season you've ever had as a coach, was basically built on the back of a terrific defense that was anchored by Herb Jones, who is like
John Petty was pretty good.
John Petty is a really good defender. I think John Petty was really underrated as a defensive player on that team too. And also at like those two guys and their leadership and holding each other and their teammates accountable on defense. And I just, you didn't see that last year from Shackelford. You didn't see that from, Quinterly and guys like that who are probably more talented, but they're talented offensively and they're prone to kind of checking out. And so, even though Shackelford is gone, Quinterly's coming back and you see can Nate Oates get all these really talented guys to buy in defensively? Like we know Bruce Pearl can, but we've only seen it 1 year and he had an all NBA level defender on his roster at the time. So are we believers in Nate Oates?
I'm a believer if he gets Namari Burnett, to a point where he can play him 24 minutes a night. Because Namari Burnett, when I watch him at Texas Tech, bought in to being a really good defender and an aggressive no middle scheme. That's the only way you were going to get on the floor as a freshman over there was to play defense. And Namari, the offense wasn't great, but there were stretches where I thought he defended really well. He's coming off a knee injury, but if you can get that kind of perimeter defender at the combo spot off of Quinterly when he comes back, then I think you find the best, wing defender that you've got. And then I think you've got something to work with there. But to me, I think Nate's got to find a guy that he can trust to be a lockdown perimeter defender for himself. And if Namari Burnett can come back and be that guy, then I start to feel a little bit better or a little bit more confident that this team's going to be adequate enough to really, push something better than fourth in this conference.
Yeah, I'm pretty high on Namari Burnett. I think he's probably, let me just make sure I'm not forgetting about, I think he's probably the most, well, maybe outside of Brandon Miller, most versatile player on the roster in terms of how they could use him. I feel like just given his skill set. So I hope he's able to bounce back and be what he was before the injury because I think he can be a really good player. So I'm pretty high on him. I think Mark Sears will be okay. I think that, just given the scoring ability there and obviously someone who can shoot the three, I think he'll be fine. Obviously, when they get Quinterly back, that'll be huge. I mean, I said this to someone, I don't remember, it was yesterday maybe. I mean, I think you can make the argument that at their best, Alabama, and I'm sure we could, I need to look at the rest of the rosters, but I think Alabama is as deep as anyone in the league in terms of available options, at least on paper. And I think it's just, but again, I feel like we said that last year. Maybe. That's it. Because look, that's something else.
They have a five-star point guard backing up, Quinterly.
Right.
Brandon Miller, little bit of a ball stopper, little bit of a questionable mid-range shooter, but he looked better in stuff like the Jordan Brand Classic and when I saw him in some All-Star games postseason. But he's got a tight handle. He's legitimately probably a jumbo wing. It's just how much offense do they flow through him at this point? Yeah. But there's, I think you can, if you roll out the lineup of Quinterly, Sears, do they bring out Keon Ellis, to start there? Or do you go Dom Welch as a floor spacer? If you believe that you want to play, the threes and free system, do you put Welch out there, Brandon Miller and Bediako? Is that what you're going to go with? I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of what we typically seen from Alabama if you do that. So, if Burnett can get in the mix there, I'm looking here. Noah Gurley graded out pretty well defensively, and from what I saw last year, he could do a pretty good job. Just, what concessions is Nate going to be willing to make to have a defensive group that can give him a chance, night in and night out. But there's talent here. If they decide they want to guard, then I'll have pretty good faith in them, but that's one thing that Bruce gets his guys to do and Nate struggles to do, and it seems like every Bama coach struggles to do that last 4 or 5 years. Even when Avery was still there, this is a team that finishes 3 or 4 spots lower than their pick, and I feel like it's because they just can't guard consistently. So I got to see him do it before I'm gonna have much more faith in you know, pick them to finish any higher than fourth, because history tells us they'll probably finish seventh, if we're being honest.
So I think that pretty much leaves us with this top three. And we're all in agreement on who the top three is. It's in some order, depending on, you know, how you feel about, you know, different coaches and players. But some order, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Arkansas. Kentucky is number one overall in KenPom. First time in a while going into preseason. Tennessee, they were top 10. They were like fourth, if I remember correctly. Arkansas preseason is like 16th, I think. And those are the three best teams. I think that is sort of how I rank them, even though right now I think I ended up with Arkansas. That's probably part of the unbalanced schedule thing, is Arkansas ended up second. Blake, what would be your order?
Well, so initially when I sent my list to my colleague Chris 2 days ago, my list was Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas, 1, 2, 3 in that order. Because I think, I don't want to say I may be higher than some people are on Tennessee, but because like you said, they're fourth in KenPom. It's not like they're exactly being ranked low, but right. I did wind up switching that back at the last second, because I think to me, and I don't want to like knock Arkansas here, but I think it's going to take a little time for Arkansas for everything to get where they want it to be.
They did get slapped around by Texas.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, if you look the past two seasons, like, this is just, it's almost like this is just what Muss's teams do. Last year, they lost 5 of 6 from mid-December to January. Year before, they lost 4 or 5 from, you know, they started 2 and 4 in SEC play. So, I mean, like, I think that's just kind of normal. You just pretty much have the confidence that he'll get it figured out by the time they get to the NCAA tournament, because they've done it the past 2 years. And so I think I would put them a little bit further behind Tennessee and Kentucky right now. I don't know exactly what would separate Tennessee and Kentucky, in my opinion, except for this fact. And the fact is, Kentucky has the reigning unanimous player of the year coming back. And I think just that aspect for me is probably why I give them the nod. You know, because I really like this Tennessee team. I'm just telling you, like, this is not just come after the exhibition win over Gonzaga, which, you know, we're always trying to crown national champions after exhibition games, which, by the way, Dennis Gates off to a 89-61 victory over the Washington University team from the 1930s there, and reigniting that rivalry already in his first start. So we'll have another podcast on why that may be the greatest exhibition win in history. But I think that's it, because I love this Tennessee team, and I really loved them before the Gonzaga result. But I think Zakai Ziegler is just, I mean, I'd take that guy. He'd be in my top, like, give me that guy. I don't even care what, like, he's got to be on the floor. I just think he's someone that you just want on the floor, you know, and you go up and down the line there. I think 1 through, I guess if we were asking, we're certainly adding in Tyreek Key into that equation. 1 through 7, I mean, I think Tennessee can beat anybody in the country, maybe, just with that group. But I think Kentucky may have a little bit more depth, and I think having Shibway back, getting, you know, a Frederick healthy is important. We know what Wallace and Livingston can do. And I know I'm not really talking about Arkansas, because obviously I have Nick Smith, who can be a player of the year candidate, I think. But I just think that Arkansas team, it's going to take a little time for them to get where they want to be, but I still think they're good enough to, you know, certainly be a second weekend NCAA tournament type team.
Feels like Arkansas too. It's different from us. You know, not the churn, because must teams churn, but I don't remember him leaning quite so hard into youth the way he is this year.
Yeah.
And I think in the past, you know, when he had transfer heavy teams, he could be a little bit more ruthless with cutting the rotation and sort of like saying, yeah, nah, we gave you got your 2 or 3 games to really show me what you could do and put some stuff on film. It's not happening. We're putting somebody else in there. And, you know, they would go through their lumps and, you know, like you said, they'd maybe hit the skids in late December and January, but he'd have his 7-man rotation. Then he'd just ride the living hell out of it. He'd have the 5 base calls that they would run and just beat teams to death with it. It's different, I think, when you've got, you know, Nick Smith, Anthony Black, Jordan Walsh, three top 25 guys, five-star kids. You know, they're going to come in, you know, have been anointed, you know, even since they've done their foreign tour. Those guys have all been on the floor. You know, you've had to sideline a kid like Devo Davis, an Arkansas kid who, you know, last year wasn't really happy about being demoted from point guard anyway. That guy's now been shelved a little bit. You know, he's basically been recruited over. You know, you've brought in, you know, other young guys like a Trevin Brazil. You know, we miss you already, Trevin. Miss you so much and your immense upside. But that meant that he had to bring in and bury the Mitchell twins who, you know, came from URI. So I'm just curious, like, how this works when he's, you know, got to manage younger talent that's going to expect to play more, and he's already having to sort of, like, you know, back burner older guys who wanted to join what they thought were national title team. So it's just going to be weird to see, or interesting to see how he handles the interpersonal dynamics there. And that's on top of this team.
He's got two 4-star in-state kids
that he's parked
that are not going to play. You know, and another 4-star kid from Alabama, I think Dunning is from.
Yeah, Barry Dunning.
So 3 4-star kids, 2 that are in state, and they're not going to play. I mean, it's one of those things like, look, you know, Muss has sort of proven at this point that he's willing to make a lot of tough calls.
Doubting him is stupid.
Yeah. He's going to make tough calls in order to win basketball games. I don't know how he keeps that locker room together. He's done it the last couple of years, so I'm not going to doubt that he won't figure it out. That's why I have them second. But I really don't understand, because, like, the success record of teams who import high-level talent and have that sort of, like, king recruiting class of multiple 5-stars, when you're not Kentucky and you're not Duke, is not great.
Yeah.
Like, if you look around like the history of teams outside of, like, a blue blood even level team, even like Kansas doesn't even do that.
Kansas gave that up.
Yeah, Kansas will bring in like one high level kid a year, and then they sort of, but they always have veterans. And I think that works for Self. Self likes guys he can trust. You know, Cal and Kay sort of figured out, like, look, we can win with this high level talent. We can sort of figure it out as the year goes along. Sometimes it blows up a little bit. Sometimes it works out. But it is like, that is one area where you have to really question, like, and again, I'm trusting that Muss is going to figure it out. But that's a big question mark, in my opinion.
And Tennessee, to me, like, it's still a lingering thing with Tennessee is the offense going to be consistent enough for them? Like, I know they're going to guard. Ziegler's tough as hell. They're going to start. I love that they have Vescovi off the ball now. I'm really eager to see what happens with Josiah Jordan James having a functional finger on his shooting hand, because I know he can defend. I know he can rebound. I know he's going to move the ball. You know, Julian Phillips, you know, we'll see. You know, he was a McDonald's All-American, you know, decommitted from LSU, kind of dragged his recruiting out this spring. Rick Barnes, to me, is still a guy who's going to lean on his vets. Olivier Nakumwa missed time with an ankle injury last year. But I like Jonas Adu, what he showed in little spurts last year. You know, Tyreek Keefe, they need a microwave dude off the bench. That's the guy. Uros is around to bludgeon people to death. So they're going to be tough. They're going to guard. But just, you know, can Ziegler... You know, he was a guy who wasn't always efficient piloting the offense. Can he be efficient doing that? You know, can Vescovi keep spacing? Can James's jumper come around? Like, all the questions I have about them are on the offensive end of the floor. But, you know, I'm willing to trust that Rick will at least get them to the point where they're going to be bought in defensively and they're going to give themselves a chance night in and night out. And maybe that's why I would probably put them slightly ahead of Arkansas. I just feel like there's a little bit more culture and chemistry and camaraderie in place there. And that's not very analytic in terms of, you know, bent, but that's just where I think I'd probably put them ahead of Arkansas right now. If we had to, like, pick today, yeah, I still think that.
I think a season, like, for them, if things haven't really gone their way, is probably, like, they're still in contention for like a protected seed. Yeah. So it's just like yeah. They're just going to be so good defensively, you know, and you know, barring anybody like, you know, getting seriously hurt. I was actually kind of surprised. And yeah, like maybe you know how to say Olivier's last name better than I do, but Nkamwa.
I just wanted to give you the opportunity. Nkamwa. So.
What did you say, Matt?
I said Nkamwa.
Nkamwa.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I was surprised when I went back and I was doing the preview at how good he was for them early last year before he got hurt.
He was really good. Yeah.
And he was a guy who I never really thought was like when they signed him, you know, it's like, oh, you know, here's a guy that probably, you know, leaves after a year. Cause he was sort of like an afterthought, international guy. And he's like, he was leading the charge offensively for them against Gonzaga. So I think it's one of those things where you have to trust Rick Barnes will, you know, at worst be very, very, very good. And I think that that's sort of what this Tennessee team is going to be. I worry about sort of like the top end for them because like, I don't really see a guy maybe outside of Julian Phillips who just looks like a surefire NBA player to me. I see a lot of good players. And they're deep and they have good college talent. But do they have guys who can sort of be difference makers and do they have a guy who can, you know, do what Oscar Tshiebwe does? And I mean, obviously not 20 points and 17 rebounds a game, but, you know, just sort of be like that level of a difference maker. And I think that's what will always sort of give Kentucky the edge for me.
That was what I was going to say for both of you. Do you think Cal's, you know, a couple of years ago, people were like saying, is Cal doomed here? Is his model dead? And I think he's pivoted his model, but I was just sort of curious. Do you think Cal's executed the pivot that everybody kind of wanted him to make, or is there still a little bit of work to do for him there?
I think it's much more polished now than it certainly was at the start. And I do think like he is, I don't know if he like is figuring it out the right phrase. I mean, I think he had figured it out before, but I think now he really, because I think someone pointed this out. I don't remember who said this, but like it is interesting to think that like we're looking at Kentucky in terms of an experienced team here. And, you know, those are kind of the things that I think we've talked about in recent years, kind of just, you know, getting guys back and adding, you know, more experienced talent to the mix versus what we saw a decade ago. It's just much different now. And I think he understands that. I mean, I think it's pretty clear just in terms of how he's built his roster recently. And, you know, you bring in a couple of those top flight freshmen that can come in, play right away, but with the understanding that you need to build around them, because I just think it's much harder now to, you know, go out and I don't want to say it's impossible, but it's a real tall task, I think, to go out and do it the way he was doing it before. So I think he's not just adding guys to add guys. I feel like he certainly is realizing there are needs. I mean, look at Antonio Reeves. You know, I know it's an exhibition game, but tonight, I mean, he, you know, they beat Kentucky State by 60 or something, but you know, he had 23 points. He had 5 threes in 21 minutes. And I think, you know, is he going to do that in every SEC game? No, but like there's a big part of it, right? Someone who can knock down threes consistently. Guess who their second leading 3-point shooter was? CJ Frederick. And now It's, you know, those are the things I think he's identified, understanding that, you know, Kentucky's going to see some zone this year, like newsflash, it's going to happen. And I think it's like his understanding that there were teams before I think could guard them in a different way, because we did, it seemed like we always had questions about just their ability to make shots beyond, you know, dunking and just getting to the rim and shooting layups. But I think now with this team specifically, he's got some defense too. I mean, look, I think guys like Jacob Toppin, I mean, we're talking like high upside. I don't know if breakout's the right word, but like, I think guys like that can be really, really good. And I mean, even a guy like, I tell you guys, a guy that I don't think is being talked about enough, and I watched them play again, take this for what it's worth, right? Context matters. Watching them against Kentucky State, but Onyenso, the 5-star, that guy, I, and like I said, I know it was who they're playing, but you know, I'm not even talking about the stats. Like, he was their leading rebounder tonight, but it's when you watch him play, like, my goodness, the length and the athleticism that this guy has.
Same with the dude Tiro. Same with that.
Yeah. Guy. I mean, they are just, I mean, they are freaks athletically. Like, that is something, too, that I think when you put all that together with this team, I don't know, you know, those guys may take a little time to acclimate once you get into real game action, but you can see the talents there. And when I look at this team one through whatever that would be, 10 or 11, I mean, you know, as I'm talking about, I'm like, I feel more confident in making my switch to Kentucky because I just think they have all the pieces you need probably to win it all here. So
I love Wheeler. I think, you know, assuming he comes back healthy, cleans up a little bit of the turnover issues that he had last year, but they've got a genuine on-ball facilitator. They've got a point guard. And I think that's always been something that I've, you know, thought for the last couple of years. Do they just have a guy who can run a team? And I think they have that. You know, obviously they have a big Oscar in the middle, but, you know, Cason Wallace is a guy that I loved, you know, watching on streams. That guy loves to defend, loves to get into people, loves to lock them down, and can shoot it a little bit. And that's going to, I think, allow Xavier Wheeler to kind of be the guy that, you know, wants to get in and provide some sneaky on-ball pressure at times. Now, Chris Livingston's a freak athlete who can attack the rack, but he shot the ball well in the Bahamas, you know, for them, you know. So they've got, you know, guys who, you know, can do more than, like you said, just, you know, play in the dribble drive and attack a gap and hope that they either dunk or get fouled. They've got some guys that can do some different things. You know, Frederick is a guy that, you know, you can now import floor spacing there. You know, Antonio Reeves was a guy, when he gets on a scoring jag, geez, it's an avalanche like we saw tonight. Those are the guys he's bringing in. So if the youngsters don't have it, he can go, all right, let's go get a guy, you know, who I know can go create from here, or a guy I can space. But I think the biggest thing that's sort of interesting to me is Cal's, you know, using the portal right now to sort of stash guys like Damian Collins is a freak athlete. Yeah. Adutiro, freak athlete. Onye, like we were talking about, is a freak athlete. Those guys are going to be around multiple years. They're going to get developed. And so now, instead of just having to remake the roster every year, maybe these guys are going two and done, but he's building that continuity. He's going out and he's getting the assets he needs. He's figured out how to work the portal. And now I think, you know, to a certain extent, politically with that fan base, it's bought him kind of a little bit more capital, because it's not just we're churning the roster every year. There are guys like, even if it's just Lance Ware, who's a, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth guy in the rotation, there's a guy they know. Jacob Toppin's going to have been around multiple years. So I don't know if he's completely pivoted, but I really think he's, you know, people laughed at him, which was a dangerous thing to do. And he's built a roster that realistically is going to probably have three or four veterans in its core group. And I think he's got the right pieces to mix it and match it. And Cal's shown us he can do that. If he gets to December coming out of the Louisville game, he's got a pretty good idea about what he needs to do, and he builds that lineup. So I'd have to go Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas as my 1-2-3. But
after the Louisville game, like, just in time to take on the University of Missouri on the road in Columbia. Interesting stat line here for you guys. So in my preview, so I published the Kentucky Wildcats SEC preview. For those listening, if you have not read it, I recommend it. But one thing that I wrote about, and I thought this was interesting, Cal actually had his third worst defense in his entire time at Kentucky last year. And I kind of always thought, like, that was the one thing that sort of held this team back a little bit. And probably was kind of one of the things that did them in a little bit in the NCAA tournament. When your offense is struggling a bit, like, you could always sort of fall back on the defense. The defense can carry the game for you. Kentucky allowed an offensive efficiency of 100 or better in 15 games last year, and 7 of their 8 losses came in those 15 games. So only one game where they allowed less than a 100 offensive efficiency rating or worse was when they lost to LSU, and that was the game where Xavier Wheeler got hurt. So that would probably explain why their offense was poor. But it's one of those things where it's just like, if if Cal can sort of get this team to defend better than they did last year, and I feel like he can, I feel like they're a little bit more athletic, like Kellen Grady, for, you know, all of his offensive prowess, not a great defender. You look at, I guess maybe Frederick coming in maybe isn't a guy who you want doing a whole lot of defending, but, you know, like even trying like Dante Allen, a guy who is just horrible defensively, Keon Brooks, you know, I think should have been a good defender, but never really was. Davion Mintz is an okay defensive guy, and you're sort of switching those guys out with like guys like Wallace and giving Toppin more minutes, and maybe Collins around the rim, and you know, Livingston just a monster of an athlete. So I feel like if like that's the kind of team that should probably be like a top 15 level on their defensive efficiency, and if they are, they'll be good enough offensively to you know, be a very, very real Final Four threat.
Something else that was different, I put this stat in my notes, going all the way back to Cal's first year in Memphis, Kentucky's only finished lower than, I think, 32nd. And for the most part, they're usually top 15 block percentage. That's something Cal talked about a lot this offseason. Last year, they were like, this was the second worst team in terms of block percentage they've ever had, or he's ever had as a coach. And I think that's something where we talk about like the athletes he brought in, just the length and athleticism on this team.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll block a lot more shots this year, and that'll obviously help their defense significantly too.
I mentioned block rate in my my
there you go there.
Yeah, so we're on the same page. But yeah, like it's just one of those things where like if you're sort of sacrificing, and I don't really think you always have to sacrifice athleticism for shooting. Like, I don't think that's necessarily a trade-off you always have to make. You just like you have to be able to sort of pick and choose who is going to be, I guess the right fit in what roles. And you know, and I don't know, like I just think the core that Kentucky has coming back, I mean, I think the title of my piece today was something along the lines of like, you know, Kentucky actually has like the best returning core of anybody in the SEC. That's because like one of the guys is the National Player of the Year. So there's nobody else in the country who can say that they're bringing back the National Player of the Year. If Oscar Tshiebwe is, you know, just as good as he was last year and not better, like Kentucky's going to be awesome.
I look at them and I just think there's Tennessee, I think, doesn't have the top end talent, but I think they've got the defensive ability to go head to head with them. I think Arkansas's got the raw talent, but I'm not quite sure if they've got the chemistry or the, you know, kismet yet to quite kind of get there. So until one of those two, you know, knocks Kentucky off its perch, I'm just going to keep them there and we'll see what happens. But we always put Kentucky first and, you know, they, by virtue of that, they always seem to underwhelm. So, Kentucky, yeah, you're going to underwhelm us again this year. We'll just start there. It's going
to
be a...
Well, the only way for them to meet expectations at this point is to finish first overall in KenPom. Like, that's... the only direction that you can go is down. And, I was a little surprised to see them first overall. I probably would have thought, you know, definitely top five, you know, but that's sort of how it works. And I mean, they're going to be great. So just how great maybe is the question. So it sounds like we're all kind of in agreement, on 1, 2, 3, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Arkansas. Any objectors before we get out of here?
No,
I think that's going to be it.
Well, Blake,
part three.
Yeah, who's your coach of the year preseason?
Oh boy, I mean, did we give it to Cal by default or like?
So, are you of the opinion? And I think like this is something we could get deep into, but I don't want to since we're already at an hour. Are you of the opinion that like too often coaches are punished for teams that were expected to be great and they are great?
Yes. Absolutely. Yep. I am of the opinion of that.
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm kind of the same way. Like I think, you know, a big portion of being a great coach is putting together a great roster. And I think Kentucky has the best overall roster when you take into experience. I think Arkansas maybe has the best talent. I think you could say maybe Alabama's up there talent wise. But when you factor in experience and all that, I think Cal would be my pick. If there's an upset, I would say,
or was
like
that my cue to say Dennis Gates? Cause I might miss my cue there. That's enough.
If Missouri makes the NCAA tournament, I think Dennis Gates could be in the mix. Like, he could be in the discussion for coach of the year. I think if say somebody like Florida, you know, gets to like a 4 or 5 seed, I think Todd Golden could be in that mix. But I think
I'll put Matt McMahon as my sleeper candidate. I think LSU could. I'll go Matt McMahon as a sleeper candidate here for that one.
It helps when he imports like half of his old roster.
Yes, exactly.
Like they know what to
expect.
Put
it in terms of roster building, this guy built a brand new roster for the most part. So maybe you give it to him by default. So
I still think I'd take McMahon or Buzz Williams just because I feel like they're both sitting kind of in that where they're an NCAA tournament team, you know, in the bubble perspective. But if they get to a 3 or a 4, you know, seed in the SEC, you know, people are going to be like, oh, wow, they made a push for a protected seed, and they'll probably, you know, be on the 5-6 line, and that's enough. And there's enough consensus over who the top, you know, 4 are, that if they dislodge somebody, I think they're going to get credit for doing that. But
another
enough
sleeper candidate, Jerry Stackhouse.
Love
if Stack gets that group to, if Stack gets that group to 6th or 7th, give it to him. Yeah. I mean, and as much as we sort of Ole Miss again being just the weirdest group in this league, if, you know, Kermit gets that group to 6th, I can almost see Kermit getting in the mix there for it. But I don't want to punish Cal. I think we do.
I always love the move from the hot seat to coach of the year to an extension. Like, that's always a great move. Like, you have to win this year. You did win this year. We were thinking about firing you, but here's 5 more years.
Take our money, please.
Well, with that all being said, we should duck on out. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Make sure you go follow Blake if you are not already at the Blake Lovell. He is currently covering the SEC sports for Southeastern 14 and doing the Blue Ribbon sports stuff still. Writing them all about that. You can get all his musings on Twitter and on YouTube if you just pull up YouTube and search Southeastern 14. It'll pop right up in your search there, and you can watch all the videos, including his ode to Dennis Gates, which we all appreciate. So that's it. If you're subscribed to our podcast, which you should be, you can find your subscription or you can get subscribed by going to Apple Podcasts and Google Play Store. We're also in Spotify. You also get the Before the Box Score. Nate and BK are back and doing good things for Mizzou football. You'll also probably enjoy reading all of this stuff over at rockemnation.com. So that's it. Follow Matt on Twitter at MattJHarris85. You can follow me if you like people making fun of Elon Musk at Sam T. Snelling. And we will be back. Matt and I will figure out when we're going to go. This 2 pods in a week thing might throw off the schedule a bit, but we'll be back at some point. And until then, thanks for being here.